So I'll just offer a few reflections tonight to help us continue with our practice here. So I think we still have 5 weeks to go on the Vassa retreat, which is still a good portion of time to, you know, something again to remind ourselves that this is an opportunity, a special opportunity that's set up to help us develop meditation, to develop mindfulness, to develop the Buddha's path. So we get a lot more time, focused time to really observe the mind and be with the mind, which can sometimes be delightful and more oftentimes rather challenging and sometimes downright painful, because we're used to being quite busy, if not busy, at least doing things with our lives. And we're, at this time of retreat, we're deliberately putting those things down in order to focus more on the cultivation of meditation, which is looking at the mind, really, working with the mind. Obviously the body comes into it. The mind and bodies are dependent, really, when we talk about the conditioned mind, if you like, sense consciousness. This is dependent on the body. And the Buddha talks about this mutual holding up of each other, the body and mind. So when it comes to developing meditation and settling the mind, we have to take into account the body. And the mind is reflected in oftentimes in bodily states. Bodily states are often reflected in mental states, and each condition the other. So becoming aware of that is actually really helpful. What we have to be with in these periods of practice are sometimes things that we have to bear with. For example, just the different hindrances that invade this mind that we're all too familiar with in some way. It's just mental restlessness, one of them. Sensual desire, or just desire seeking satiety in any through any of the senses, doubt, which can invade the mind, or ill will, or anger, or just strong aversion can invade the mind. And the fifth hindrance being sloth and torpor. Any of these can dominate at any particular time, and it's never a pleasant experience to have to deal with, to have to encounter the hindrances. And yet, we really need to get to know what these experiences are and how to relate to them, how to really observe what's actually happening in this body-mind as we're experiencing them. Because every moment of input, you know, every moment of relationship to these experiences is having an effect. And we need to begin to recognize what that is. Is it increasing the difficulty, or is it allaying the difficulty? This is something, this is the development of wisdom, even with the difficult states that we experience. For me, in this retreat, and obviously in other retreats as well, mental restlessness can be something that seems to invade the mind and stay more than any of the other hindrances. And there can be a lot of learning around that. Any of these hindrances are intense forms of suffering in their extreme forms. So first we need to really recognize what's happening, what's going on, what's actually present, what are the predominant factors in the mind. Once we can recognize that, once we have awareness of that, we've got, it doesn't seem like it, but, you know, we're 50% of the way to dealing well with this, simply to recognize, simply to bring awareness to what is present, to what's actually happening for us. And to acknowledge the dukkha therein, to acknowledge the unpleasantness of that. So there's the unpleasantness of that particular state, and then there's the added unpleasantness, which is usually the resistance to it, or the not wanting it, or the trying to get rid of it, or the trying to fix it. So again, these are the layers of response, habitual response that happens to these happens in relation to these experiences that we have to come to know, because this is our input. We haven't invited the restlessness, we haven't invited the doubt, we haven't invited these states, but they've arisen. Now that they've arisen, they're present, we're aware of them. And every moment of us relating to them is a moment of input, a fresh karma, if you like. So it's really important to become aware of how am I relating to this experience that has arisen. You know, most of the time we just get into a habitual struggle with it. Create a sense of self around it. This is me, this is my problem, this is what I am, I don't like it, how do I get rid of it, how do I work with it? And sometimes the teachings can actually almost justify, oh, I've got to do something with this hindrance, you know. I've got to develop metta with anger, I've got to get clear about my practice, about Dharma with doubt, or I've got to somehow calm this mind if it's stirred up with restlessness, etc. You know, so sometimes we can be stirred into doing, I'm thinking I've got to do something. But you know, you can notice a lot of the time with that energy, with that input, we can actually increase the dukkha. We can actually increase the self-view. We can actually not notice maybe our input is coming from anxiety or aversion or not wanting. So important just to check what is the quality of my relationship to this, whatever it is at this point in time. Because this is where delusion, this is where ignorance is working all the time, you know, it's really hard to see. But this, it's coming back to right view and right intention, actually. Right view is recognizing what's happening, recognizing if there's dukkha present, and recognizing what that is. And then part of that right view is also recognizing, is there craving or tanha? And tanha is in the form of either wanting or not wanting. The wanting is much more obvious sometimes than the not wanting. the not wanting can really fuel a sense of aversion, a justified aversion. I have to get rid of this experience. It's not right. So really become aware of that, you know, because in terms of right intention, the intention of non-harm or kindness, the intention of non-ill will or compassion, if you like, or Ajahn Brahm says gentleness, be kind, be gentle. The intention of letting go or renunciation or making peace. This is very can be very helpful to recollect these qualities of right intention, actually in relationship to our own mind states. Now, this isn't in order to justify anything, but to explore and practice with, because sometimes just recollecting that when you're struggling with something, that kindness, that gentleness, that willingness to let go or let be in the face of this thing. We've become aware of it, we've established right view, we understand what's happening. And now perhaps explore this relationship to this experience in terms of right intention. And see what happens there. Because I've found that this, if I do that, I can often uncover an underlying resistance, an underlying aversion to the state that's present or the experience that's present. And when I'm able to adjust and allow for some kindness, some compassion, some gentleness, making peace, letting go or letting be, something begins to shift there. And it's a little bit, you know, it's for the thinking mind, it's counterintuitive. For the wisdom mind, it works, but for the, you know, we often don't think of relating to these painful states with kindness, with compassion, with this quality of making peace or letting go. And we especially don't think of it when we're in the middle of the struggle with something, because we're kind of already born into it, if you like. Whether it's a extremely restless mind or confused mind or a mind that feels averse towards one's idea of self. So explore this this territory, because encountering the five hindrances are, you know, is a standard in this path of practice. As we develop the meditation and, you know, the hindrances will come and go, and sometimes become fiercely intense, like these winds that whip up out of nowhere. And you can think, oh, everything's gone to hell, you know, what's happened with all my cultivation, it's all gone wrong. But if you're noticing this I thought, it's all about me, you know, we've been kind of born into that, thoroughly believing that this state is me and mine. It's like believing that, oh my God, the winds are here and they're going to be forever here, the sun's not going to shine again, we're never going to have a calm day ever again. Now, I'm sure that can feel like that at times in the middle of a hurricane that lasts for days. But usually we don't make those assumptions with the weather, because we've observed enough over time that the weather is, what do they say? It's fickle, it changes just like that. So, but we're not so familiar with those changes internally, even though these hindrances, these different mind states come and go in a similar fashion, as fickle as they seem to come out of nowhere and change. But when they come in, we're like, oh my God, this is me and mine and my problem, and here we are again. And if it's an old, connected with an old memory, you can suddenly feel like, oh, I haven't gotten anywhere. All this has come back again, it's flooded the mind, nothing's changed. But in fact, it's just like the wind has been whipped up. And we have to try to remember, you know, just that basic teaching, this will change. This has arisen. If something arises, it also ceases. And once we're born into it, it's really hard to see this is not self. It's like, oh, it's just dripping with self. But so begin with just recognizing or trying to recollect again. This is impermanent. This has arisen. It's not static even as I observe it. Yes, it's unpleasant. But unpleasant feelings also come and go. They don't stay. And when unpleasant feelings go, usually pleasant feelings or neutral feelings arise in their place. So this can just help you get a little bit of perspective on what you're experiencing and try to see the changing nature of that experience in and of itself in that moment, in that experience. Recollecting again mindfulness of the body, but just seeing how much this I thought. You can start exploring how much this I thought, the grabbing of it and turning it into a me and mine, so intensifies the suffering of that state, that mind state. And you can just keep watching that every time the I thought comes in relation to it. Notice the increase of pain and when the thought ceases for a moment. Notice what happens then. So there's the mental states that arise, the moods, the mind states that come and go. But the overlay, the claiming it to be me and mine, is something added extra. We have to see how that happens and learn how to let that go as well. But even when we're in the midst of gripping it, this remembering of right intention in terms of being kind, being gentle, making peace, can actually help soften that grip. Because the I thought, the clinging, the craving and clinging, it's fueled, it's completely fueled by ignorance, by karma. But as we observe it, there's something in that which can observe the birth of oneself. It's very interesting. As you become that state, as you believe this is me, this is mine, this is what I am, there's something in us that can see that and recognize that. And see the whole mechanism of dukkha in that state. If you can see that, you can let go. Letting go here means just recognizing this is not me. This is just a conditioned habit of clinging, of identifying with something, and then becoming averse to it. And this is what we call vipava tanha. Double dukkha. So you have to practice with this to see the results of it, because every time you bring in or you're able to establish right view and right intention in that sense, you'll notice the changes, you'll notice the results, you'll notice the allaying of dukkha. And this is something that really needs to be recognized. This is the third noble truth. You need to take that in. The heart needs to recognize that moment of the softening, the letting go, the readjustment of the view of the intention. Take that in. Savor it, as one psychologist talks about. The Buddha talks about realizing the third noble truth, realizing the cessation of suffering, realizing it, seeing it, knowing it, tasting it, recognizing it. This is instructive, very instructive for the heart, for developing wisdom, for developing the path. The path ultimately is just knowing when there's dukkha and knowing the cessation of dukkha. Dukkha arising, dukkha ceasing. Now we can talk about this in terms of these relative moments of suffering, softening. It doesn't have to be in terms of the complete cessation of dukkha when we become arahants. But these moments, these is the day-to-day stuff is where we're learning, where we're growing wisdom. So even if suffering is allayed only momentarily, to truly recognize that is needed. And sometimes these states that come and go, if you find that right perspective or right relationship with them, sometimes they just can change so quickly, like the winds might just drop completely. And you haven't done anything. And then you really see the not-self nature of it. It's like, yeah, it really just had a life of its own, didn't it? And me not getting too involved with it actually allowed it to just move through. So this is hard when we're very familiar with certain states that we're used to believing are me and mine. You know, the old stories, the memories that can come up in retreat time, the memories can assail one. Sometimes it can be all the bad memories assail one day, and then the next day you get a load of good memories coming back. And they can be so believable, the mind can spin them into new stories, depending on the mood of the mind. You know, if you're down on yourself, you'll spin new stories about how I'm just like the worst person in the world, or the most hopeless case meditator, or I'm never gonna, make anything good of my life. You can spin so many old memories and old stories into, new negative self-views. You've got to keep waking up to that. And really what's happening the mind is just affected by ill will or aversion, and it's self-focused instead of other-focused. And recognizing that underlying mind state and seeing this is just a mind state, not believing the thoughts that can spin out of it. Similarly, when we're getting all puffed up, you know, the ego's getting all puffed up on how great I am and blah, 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 blah. Similarly, not self. It doesn't feel so much dukkha as the other self-negative view, but really they're dependent on each other. They're very much connected. For if you believe you are the good self, as soon as that those mind states end, you're going to sink into the bad self again. So it just alternates, really. So seeing that a whole lot is not self, as just conditions arising due to past causes, is the perspective of the one cultivating the path, the perspective we need to learn to align with. But as I've said before, our learning comes through the trenches, really. We kind of do hand-to-hand combat with these things, and our learning comes out of that. So, in a sense, we're always failing. That's what it feels like. But it's not a failure, it's a learning. We're learning. And there's no one to fail anyway. You know, this is just the mind spinning its tricks. So sharpening the wisdom sword, or cultivating wisdom, is just seeing all aspects of the mind's tricks and habits, and deepening this sense for yourself, this sense of, I guess what I was talking about this morning at the meal time, is really establishing a deep sense of refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and really working that in your own heart, the internal refuge in that which is aware, fully awake. This is the Buddha seed that we each have in our own minds. Don't believe you don't have that. When we believe we don't have that, we get lost. So bringing yourself back to just this inherent awareness, this natural clarity of the mind, even though it gets overlaid with these different moods that come and go, these different states that come and go, there's a natural knowing, natural awareness in the heart. So this is what I relate to as refuge in Buddha, establishing your refuge there and developing that, developing your capacity to be fully aware. And forgetfulness is another word for ignorance. We forget it. We lose touch with it. But every time you forget, you can wake up again. It's like the sun in the sky. It's not that the sun has disappeared when the clouds come. It's just momentarily obscured. And refuge, obviously, in Dharma is being from that position of the Buddha, Buddha knowing the Dharma, establishing yourself in full awareness, knowing things as they are. Not knowing things as they should be, or I want them to be, or I'd rather them to be. Knowing things as they are. This is Dharma. And often we overlook this Dharma, things as they are appearing in our own hearts. Often we overlook it because we want something different. We believe the truth is somewhere else. But the real Dharma is right here and now. Things as they are, and the Buddha knows them as they are. The Buddha can see particularly the impermanent nature of it, the painful nature of it when we cling to it as self. And the Buddha also knows the cessation of dukkha when that clinging is relinquished or let go. So for me, personally, in my own practice, I developed that refuge, internal refuge in Sangha, as the reminding myself to trust in this, to trust that this position of Buddha knowing the Dhamma, being fully aware of the way things are, looking into the truth of that, to trust that this has a power in itself. This has the power to awaken within it. To trust that. To trust your own capacity to awaken. To trust that all beings have this capacity to awaken. An awakening to the truth of the way things are. That's the liberating Dhamma. Not awakening to something on another planet or something somewhere else. Awakening to the truth of the way things are here and now. And this truth is all around discerning dukkha and the cessation of dukkha in its various manifestations. So I just offer these words for us tonight for our reflection.